Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron. That was Taisha with Karanga. And just in time, we have Naranoa Renata for our Kairongo segment. Good morning.
Atamari, e te whānau whānui o Whaingaroa. And those of you who are listening or who may choose to listen at another time on the podcast.
You're coming to us from... Sorry, I've talked all over you there. I was going to say, you're coming to us from Kirikiriroa this morning?
Yes, I am. I'm at Rotoroa, which is a lake. The lake in the heart of Kirikiriroa.
The lake with the ducks.
Yeah. Yeah, there are ducks. There's a pukeko. But there's no white swans. There used to be black swans here.
Oh, really? Okay. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about this morning. What's the first thing that you wanted to discuss?
Well, I'd like to offer the karakia again, both in first and foremost, to open this portal in Māori and then in English. So okay. I'll do that now.
Okay.
So, mā te rā e kaue mai te ngoi i a rā. Mā te mārama e whakaora i a koe i Wainganui Pō. Mā te ua e horoi au māharahara, mā te hau e pupuhi te pā kahukahu ki roto i tō tinana, i roto i au hikoitanga i te ao. Kia whakaro koe ki te humāri e a tāhua hoki o rā mō ake tonu atu. Āmene. And one of the translations goes like this. May the sun bring you energy by day. May the moon softly restore you by night. May the rain wash away your worries. May the wind blow new strength into your being. May you walk on the earth in peace, and all the days of your life know its beauty forever and ever. Amen. Amen. Both of those are appropriate.
I always feel the urge to ask you how the translation, if stuff was lost in the translation because some things are not possible to translate perfectly?
No, but I think that it depends on, I don't know the writer, the kaituhi of this particular karakia, but my understanding would be that when they're written really well, the origins of it is that the person is bilingual. And so they have a deeper understanding of what it feels like in Māori, and are able to give a very clear transmission in English as well, having both of those languages really clearly imported into their being. Mm. And this one actually is a beautiful. The translations are. Both hold their own Māori, their own life force. So you could use either one or the two together, and they would have a certain energy, vibration, frequency, all those words.
And I guess there's a certain power in being raised speaking both languages, like you're completely bilingual.
There is a certain power, and I think it's definitely when you see the number of, probably make assumptions about when you hear the reo being spoken today, you might assume that somebody has grown up with it since birth, or you may wish to ask, you know, inquire further. Because the number of those who were actually born into the reo and then have English as a language as well, and other languages, possibly, is diminishing. And so with the our current situation within education, to have a schooling system which caters for those who wish to invite that into their families, so that their own children become their first language is Māori, but the parents, their first language maybe is likely to be English.
Yeah.
And so there's that desire for the te reo rangatira to flourish. However, it may be, there may also be a gap where the parents are not, the child grows up into a youth with fluency in the reo and in English, but their parents may not be so much as well. But, you know, that's a whole other story.
Yeah. And I'm diverting the interview again. Let's talk about the stuff that you plan to talk about. What have we got first up?
Well, I really wanted to invite the listeners to introduce you to the work of a Tonga Pūoro practitioner. I think I can use those words safely. And his name is Alistair Fraser. I have yet to meet Al, as he calls himself, Al, but I have met through an exchange of asking him to make some taonga pūoro for me, which are traditional and contemporary Māori instruments, and it's a whole other field. You know, like in the orchestra, you have a whole range of wind instruments, percussion, wind, percussion, stringed, and those. Well, in Te Ao Māori, there is a renaissance of taonga pūoro, which is also an extensive field of these traditional Māori wind instruments. And he's written a comment here in a CD. I received 3 CDs from him of his music, and this album is called Toitū Te Pūoro, referring to the Ngāngme, the instruments of taonga pūoro flourish and remain with us. But because of his background and the experiences that he's had over the years too, he comments here, he says, the voices of ngā taonga pūoro remained largely silent for many generations. The taonga languished in museums, many abroad, nearly entirely silenced by the heavy blow of colonization. The sounds of their voices remained in the people's memories and in kōrero. Some traditions were passed down and the voices were cherished. Over the last few decades, the voices and forms of Ngā Taonga Pūoro have been carefully nurtured and uncovered. The process of reviving the voices is ongoing, but the pūoro remains intact and complete, entire, permanent. The pūoro has never left us. So he's speaking quite a legacy about these instruments. Now I have the pictures in front of me, which is in the book which accompanies the CD. There's a huge range of instruments that Alistair Fraser plays on this album, made from different natural materials, constructed. The kōwauo punga ihu, which is the gourd, the calabash, taha, is made from that material. There's a purotiti takiwai, which is made from what I can see is paunamu, greenstone. There's a pūkaia, which is made from some other type of wood. Pūtori no rākau kōwhai, obviously made from the branch of a kōwhai tree. that's a wind instrument, a flute-type instrument. And karanga manu, which is made from stone, carved from stone tools. It's of stone. You have a track there that you can play for us of ours?
Yeah, so the first track, or a track off that album that you mentioned, it's called Chrysalis. It's about 6 minutes long. Do we want to play 6.5 minutes? Do we want to play the whole track through, do you think?
Maybe just play 3 minutes and then we'll also finish with that, the rest of it.
Okay, all right. Okay, all right. Well, I'm going to hit play now, and you should hear it as well on your phone. No, no.
Oh, cool.
I press the play. It's got words on the screen. It's coming soon. Show on Raglan Community Radio. This is a track called Chrysalis by Al Fraser. And I don't know, we've still got you on the line?
Yes, we do.
Would it be appropriate? Sorry, can I just leave it? Would it be appropriate to play it quietly in the background while we talk, or should I bring it to an end?
I'll probably we'll save it for the end.
Okay, all right.
Is that all right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the instruments that you heard in that composition with the Putorino, which is considered the goddess of flute music. It's a wind instrument. Hue Puruhau, which can be a large or smaller gourd that is also blown as a wind instrument. Porotiti Parahi, which is it's two strings and it makes this vibrating sound of the shape like a surfboard or actually that's not a very good description, but kind of.
Kind of.
Porotiti and pākuru and the reo. So there was also a human voice within that composition.
Was there?
Yeah, very, very lightly. I know it's quite, you have to turn our ears to a different sound vibration.
Yeah.
I know myself from actually when I first listened to them and then decided I needed to actually listen to them again because my ears had to tune into different oro, different sound waves.
And can I just mention at the start of the video that there appear to be some of those instruments actually shown on screen?
Oh, how beautiful.
So if people want to see that, just look for Chrysalis by Al Fraser
On
YouTube, and then you can check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, there's as I said, there's a renaissance and a revival for these instruments to be people to be able to find workshops where they can have access to them, they can start playing them and having them within their homes, and you don't have to be an adult to do that. You know, it starts with the younger people being exposed to them too.
Right.
From a very young age. So they can hear these sounds. Because we have experienced a lot of electronic sounds in the last too long really. So we're returning, I think, to a more acoustic sound, tuning our ears back into these sounds that may require amplification, but they also require you to listen differently.
And there's something happening in music at the moment, which is because everything's been made on a computer, every note and every beat is perfectly in time with the, you know, the timing, the 4-4 time and everything, and every note is exactly, because it's auto-tuned, so everything's become computerized exactly on the beat, exactly auto-tuned, and that has its place, but this is a complete contrast to that.
Yes, complete contrast in the sense that we're not looking for... So when you are sitting in an orchestra situation, the main tuning fork is tuned to, concert C. They call it a concert C. So the instrument's there for the orchestra to play in tune chooses that particular... Western note, it's Western notation.
Yeah.
To tune to, that's not what you do with tonga puoro. So there's a whole nother rhythm of scale which has yet to be manifested. If it chooses to be, it can be remain more passed on by hearing, copying, or within the situation that you're in when you're playing, you know?
So there's not an official theory of how it works that's written down?
I mean, there are alignments. There's been research done about, you know, trying to align it to a major or minor scale, but that's not actually necessary. It's just people, researchers wanting to call it, you know, is that a C sharp, is that a B flat? Well, in at the heart of it, in terms of its oro, it sounds that's not that relevant. It's just another piece of technical information, really, if you know what I mean. We're not trying to adapt or find whether it's like Western music, because as you can hear, as you just heard,
it's very different.
Its own vibration.
Well, the notation or the note system of Western music is not universal. It has its own internal logic and it relates to certain frequencies, but it's not the only way to set notes to the frequencies.
Absolutely not. Yeah, and that's the thing we need to be very mindful of, is that we're not looking to do a concert C and all be in tuned up before we before we start to explore and compose pieces that have tonga puoro as one of their main theme of delivery.
Can I ask? Yeah. We talk about compositions and we have clear pieces of music. Later on, I'll be playing more music and But were there compositions that Maori people made, or was it, you know, pre-European times, or was it all kind of in the moment, the music?
Oh, no. There was definitely tribal composers tribally.
Yeah.
Who gave much of their life to recording tribal history through and so those could, the hapu, the sub-tribe or the tribe, could travel with those as well and recite them when they were travelling out of their tribal areas. And so people would learn of a great deal about their history. Also, love songs were often written.
Realised that was actually a really silly question, because I should know, and I do know that music was music was often the way that history and information was passed on from generation to generation.
Oh, absolutely.
For it was so many cultures.
And it was just the most reliable way of connecting. You went, oh, right. You would learn of people's names, and you would learn that they were from that hapu or that tribe, because of the way when the chants were, you know, the motiatia and the different forms of chants. There's a whole range of where they were used in terms of the celebrations. They were suitable for like a waiapatangi was sung when someone had passed away. Those compositions were appropriate for that time.
Yeah.
Or being welcomed on to another pa site, onto the marae, you would choose something that was appropriate that you knew for that. So, yeah, there was composing compositions was part of life.
Yeah.
As you realised.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, so have you covered what you wanted to cover there? Are we talking about the...
I just wanted to, perhaps in closing, is to actually come back to the rongoā and to give some information to people about two plants. One is horopito. The horopito is known as the pepper tree, Pseudo Wintera colorata is its Latin name. And there is some here growing around the lake. I have discovered it, and I'm very joyful that is so. Because it's not like kawakawa, you will find it everywhere.
Yeah.
Because you will not. So the leaves, the actual leaves of the horopito, were chewed for toothache. And... A decoction of the leaves was used as a remedy for abdominal pain and for feverish conditions.
Okay,
the bark itself was used as a substitute for quinine. So it has some scientific background. It was used as a substitute for quinine.
You're going to have to remind me what quinine does. I should know, but I don't.
What does it do? Because it's so far from my, I haven't heard it for so long. Quinine. No, we're going to get one of the listeners to.
Here we go.
I've got the
power of the internet in front of me. Used to treat malaria, of course. There we go.
Yeah, that's right. So true. So horopito is also a female herb used in a tincture form for vaginal thrush. Very reliable, but also the reliability of a tincture. Tinctures have a very long lifespan. There are certain preparation of plant material that is held within an alcoholic solution.
Yeah.
And they're called tinctures, and they're very reliable, and you know, have a very long, as I'm just repeating myself, have a long lifespan. So that's horopito.
So I've just put up a picture on the internet, and looking at the leaves, And they're green, but they have a lot of brown spots on them, which I presume is normal.
But yes, it is normal. Yeah. They're more greyish. The underside of the leaf is grey, is a grey colour.
Okay, and the leaves would be, what, 5 to 7 centimetres long? Maybe
yes,
longer, maybe 10?
And they're very bitter. Korepiko, in terms of, say you were in a... It's almost the equivalent to peppermint oil in a balm, which is used for muscles. You know, and if you go into a sort of studio where you receive treatment, like physiotherapist.
Oh yeah, okay.
Which has peppermint oil in it. So the equivalent of that in Rua is horopito. Horopito would be very much offer relief in that regard too, if it's placed in a balm.
Yeah, and where does it grow? Do you have it at your place? I presume you try to grow so many different types of these plants at your place.
Yes, no, unsuccessful with horopito at this point.
Okay,
it's quite obviously quite fussy, so still going to give it another go, but also I've now found it here at the lake. So it's not one that people will recognise easily, but it's here.
Does it? What sort of conditions does it prefer? That's probably a dampish environment if it's down by the lake.
Yeah, and also it grows more further south.
Ah.
So we're travelling south.
Yep.
Into the forest, so south of Taupo, around there.
Okay, is that it raises the question, like we talk about climate change and how the plants that grow in certain places are going to shift south in our hemisphere. Is that something that you're thinking about at all or noticing?
Yeah, we have to. We actually we're not having a choice really,
yeah.
Because we're discussing how unstable the weather patterns are, but that's really a result of many, many things, and some plants will not adapt. They will disappear.
Mm.
I'm sure there is an active, there are people who are actively saving the seeds.
Yeah, yeah.
As well, but some will completely die out because they just, it's just not, the adaption is not going to happen. But we do have to not expect something to go back to what we think is normal, because that's not likely to happen now.
Yeah.
We are actually in a state of, in terms of temperature changes, which we just have to be so aware of.
Yeah, well, the events of
possible.
The storms we had earlier this year have made it pretty clear to everyone that times are changing.
Oh yeah, we're still very much in recovery in that regard. You know what's happening in the Hawke's Bay, the cleanup from the cyclone, and those extraordinary devastation that has occurred there. Yeah, it's incredible.
I imagine if there's people who use the rongo like you do over there, which there will be, I imagine that they might have run out of supplies a little bit, depending exactly where they are.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, access. You know, what we realise is having access to these things. In terms of plant material, from this point forward, I'll be encouraging people to have a small jar of kumaraho from now on through the winter months, because it'll be like gold. To make a medicine for the respiratory system.
Okay.
It will very much assist to give relief and to heal those things that come with this change of temperature. You know, not every day is going to be cold, it's going to be warm, so other things are going to breed, if you like.
Yeah. And in fact, we've got a cold night coming up tonight, going to be 7 degrees with rain as well.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's snow falling down south. A lot of snow, apparently.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. We just have to keep an eye out for each other. Yeah, and, you know, I'll just keep offering that I have the kumaraho, which is one I really, really, really cherish. and people have it in their first, to invite them to place it in their first aid kits, because you need them. You're going to need these first aid kits to be designed for you and your whānau,
yeah,
as you go forward, and I, you know, in a genuine way, so we can go, oh yeah, I've got that. I've got that, you know, in my kite of healing balm.
Do you have plenty of it?
Yes, I do. Yes, okay. I do, because it's one of my favourite kumaraho. The one in closing is the hohere, and the one that I want people to learn about is the, it's called lace bark. Is the bark, is just to say, you take the bark and you cut it into strips, and you soak it in cold water for a couple of days, and there's this thick gel that's formed, which is, which you can use, and it's very safe to use for bathing weak or sore eyes. You know, even, I'm even going to say that for a little baby, it's completely safe.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to recommend that, because there'll be those, you know, eyes. What do I do for their eyes? Oh, yeah, there's eye bright as well. But in terms of rua, the hohere, which is as common in the Waikato as kawakawa. But you will need to ID it, of course.
So I'm looking at a picture again. I've brought this up. I don't. Does it just get to a height of about 3 meters? I've got one tree to look at, so I'm not certain.
Yeah, it's a tree. It is very much a tree. It's not a tall, tall tree, but it is. It is a tree. Yes.
Yeah, with small white flowers as well.
Oh yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Probably still blooming right now.
Okay, and often referred to as lace bark or ribbonwood. People might have heard that as
well. Hohere. A magical plant to know about. And if you're looking for those, something to bathe weak or sore eyes. Yeah, so that's me really.
Okay.
And just as we, you know, play the rest of Al Fraser's track, and I'll pick that thread up again at our next interview.
Okay, so folks, if you've just tuned in, earlier on we were talking about Taonga Puro once again, and Al Fraser, who, actually just describe him just a little bit, just remind us of what he's been doing.
Oh, for many years now he's been a champion of Taonga Puro. He's devoted much of his life to being a practitioner, playing with, and also making the instruments. He's an instrument maker. And sharing his love and passion for that whole world of Taonga Puro in a very, very professional way.
And he has an album out, and we're playing a track off the album called Chrysalis. Yes, we were playing that earlier.
Toitū Te Puoro. The other two albums I have, I can't pronounce the name, Pansa Lasa, and Pō Nguru. So very fortunate to have these. But I will extend on this kōrero at our next radio interview.
And a couple of weeks, and will you be in Whangaroa for that?
Yes, I will.
Okay, that's excellent. It's always much easier in the studio, especially we're trying to describe visual things together. So are you going to listen to the track down the phone, or are we saying goodbye to you now?
Yeah, no, I listen to the track.
Okay, all right. Well, maybe we'll say goodbye to you now and listen to the track at the same time, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Ai, kia ora. Kai ki te anō koutou. Kia haumaru.
And here is Chrysalis by Al Fraser.